In no particular order, I will go through some of the questions that were asked over the past few days, and feel free to keep asking. But hopefully this will help those that have the same question and didn't have a chance to ask, or it will help me send people this recording instead of answering every single person. But always feel free to reach out, and Bli Nedar, I will get back to you when time allows. So someone asked regarding kashering with a steamer. The question was, can I kasher my countertops with using a steamer? A steamer could theoretically get to 200 degrees or 212. So isn't that the same as pouring hot water? So halachically, there are a few issues, a few concerns. Number one, without getting into the background, obviously, if someone has a question, feel free to reach out. But this recording will be quick responses. Halachically, we paskin that a person should not use steam to kasher unless the tray for chametz went into the keli through steam. But if we are concerned for spills or hot food being placed directly onto a counter, kashering with steam will not help. One needs to kasher with water. That is the way halacha points it out in Siman Taf Nun Aleph. And therefore, to use steam is not going to be a good, would not be a sufficient way to kasher. With that being said, if the steam ends up condensating in a way that the water is above, we'll call it Yatzla, this by 170, maybe 180 degrees, perhaps 190 would be more safe. So then that water could, in fact, kasher. So you could use a steamer if you change the setting, assuming the steamer comes with settings. That's a water setting, and it comes out at 100 and, we'll call it 180, 190 degrees. So then that would be considered a kashering of Eroi. It would help to kasher counters with that. That would work. And that's the quicker response regarding kashering with a steamer. But to use steam, it would not help. Next, regarding kashering ovens. So there are two different types of ovens that people ask. One would be more of a pizza oven, where food is put directly onto the floor of the oven. In that case, you would need to do Liban Chamer or Liban Gummer. And we would, if the oven has a self-clean, a real self-clean that gets to 900 degrees, so that would be the way to do it. Otherwise, you would need to blowtorch to kasher that oven. Let's say the oven is used like most people do in residential homes, that they put food in a pan, and that pan is placed on oven racks. So if that's the case, then there would be a halachic rationale not to require a Liban Gummer. And in fact, over the years, many have ruined their ovens by turning on self-clean. So I would typically recommend, if you could actually clean it, when you don't use the self-clean option and you're going to use what we'll call it option B. Option B requires a real rigorous cleaning before kashering. So you would have to use some type of Easy Off or some other chemical, let it sit there for 24 hours and scrub the oven down so it's clean. Once the oven is clean, we are only concerned for blias, for absorbed taste in the walls. And based on how our ovens are being used, among other halachic considerations, one could kasher by turning it on to the highest setting for 90 minutes. This is after it has been cleaned and has not been used for chametz, hot chametz, or better not to use it for anything, in the previous 24 hours. That would be the way to kasher an oven. I will point out, if you're using option B, again, it needs to be cleaned thoroughly. Second halachic consideration is that the person on Yontif itself, on Pesach, do not put food directly onto the oven racks. One could debate if the oven racks were in fact kashered the way it needs to be kashered. So I would recommend, as a chumrah, when a person is kashering through turning on to the highest setting for 90 minutes, to not put food directly onto, like a matzah or something else, directly onto the racks. Always use a pan or a piece of foil. That's what I would recommend. Another question was asked regarding water from Costco. So on many of the lists, they say that if the mineral water contains calcium citrate, so then citrate could come from, comes from citric acid, and citric acid could theoretically come from chametz, maybe comes from kidneys, and therefore a person should not use Costco water. I will point out that from halachic reasoning, and the OU has said this in the past, I didn't check if they say this year from a policy standpoint, but halachically, the citric acid or the calcium citrate is used in parts per million. That's how it's measured. It doesn't give any significant flavor to the beverage. It changes the pH level. Whatever the reason they put it into the bottle, whatever the reason is, it doesn't affect the taste. And anyways, it's only a suffix. If it's even kidneyous, it's almost for sure not coming from chametz. So halachically, a person would be able to drink it. Is pure spring water better? I guess so. That spring water, there's no question in the world. You don't need a recording to say pshat why it's mutter. But halachically, there is no issue with any of the water from Costco, the typical bottled water that we have in America from Costco. I think the water in Canada is spring water, but our water, filtered water that has calcium citrate, halachically, that would be fine. Once we're on the topic of Costco, so I mentioned this the other week, but people are asking, so I will mention it again. The avocado oil from the Chosen Foods brand and the avocado oil spray, both under the OU. So the OU has confirmed that these products are certified as OU, and they are not an issue on Pesach. Again, the OU is not certifying it as kosher Pesach. That would require a mashgiach tamidi, according to the OU standards. But they are saying that these products are made in dedicated facilities where there is no chametz or kidney as concern, and a person would be allowed to buy it, and they can rest assured that these products are kosher Pesach. On the topic of oil, so that would only be that brand of avocado oil. Other brands would require hashgacha for Pesach. OU has a list of their own brands that are fine without a special Pesach certification. Most oil is a process and deodorized, and you would have a concern that it was made on equipment that contains kidneyous oils. Very rare to find chametz oil in America. And for Sfardim, they could probably... Again, I'm not confirming this, but they should ask if they have a shaila regarding using canola oil or corn oil, Sfardim who eat kidneyous. But for Ashkenazim, that would be a concern, at least lechatchila. Additionally, there is no verification, unless you actually do your own research, into the status of these oils. Is there any concern for chametz on the same equipment? And therefore, for Ashkenazim, the typical practice is to only use oil that is certified for Pesach. Now, there's an exception, and that is olive oil. Olive oil is extra virgin olive oil is not deodorized, so there is no concern for equipment. There is a concern for adulteration or fraud. The OU and the CRC and some of the other national hashgachos have researched it, and they say that any adulteration would only be non-kidneyous and non-chametz. So they say there is no issue with that, and they still accept extra virgin olive oil without hashgacha for Pesach. So one could assume that these items are kosher. If you have OUP, or I'm not sure OU what their standard is on their P, on the kosher Pesach olive oil, but I would assume that they treat it differently, and they have hashgacha tamidis involved. There are other brands that have we'll call it Heimish hashgachas, with much more oversight when it comes to olive oil, so there is a benefit of using those brands. But halachically, there wouldn't be an issue of using the extra virgin olive oil on Pesach. Regarding salt, so salt intrinsically does not have any issue of chametz, and that would include kosher salt and sea salt. However, table salt typically contains iodine. The iodine is not chametz, but they usually add some starch to help the iodine flow in the table salt, and therefore we would recommend a person get iodine-free salt on Pesach. Other salts, let's say a Himalayan salt, that would be fine. The only salt to avoid, again, is the table salt that contains iodine for the starch concern. And flavored salt or smoked salt, they need hashgacha all year round, and they would also require hashgacha for Pesach. Someone asked regarding e-cigarettes, can a person do that, vape on Pesach? So I'm not commenting on vaping in general, but the person who's asking the shayla is asking that they do this. They want to know, is there a chametz concern? So when you have a product that contains ethanol, which is alcohol, and it contains flavor, so those two are red flags in the world of kashrus when it comes to chametz. Ethanol can theoretically come from a chametz source, especially if it's sourced from Europe. In the United States and in Canada, for the most part, ethanol is coming from innocuous sources, or at the very or at worst, it would come from corn, which would be kidneyous. And there's a question regarding using something from kidneyous, but there's another point here, And that is the flavor could also theoretically come from hummus sources. And therefore, there are those that say that one should only get vape or e-cigarette with hashgacha. The problem is it's hard to find. And it's not necessarily, most hashgachas wouldn't necessarily give hashgacha on e-cigarettes. So I just want to point out why there would be those that would be mekel, not those people, why rabbanim would be mekel. I think a person should ask a shayla, depending on the tzarech and depending on the product. So there are two other components of the e-cigarette, and that is there's propylene glycol, and depending on how much propylene glycol is in the product, we could debate if it creates something that's nifsal me'achila, and you have nicotine. So both of those items probably cause the entire solution to be nifsal me'achila. There is a concern that it does have some flavor. People obviously like it, and they request a specific flavor, but one could argue that that is not for eating purposes. That's simply to vape, and you have no intention of ever swallowing. And it gets to the question of tasting something without swallowing and the concern for achshavei, are you showing that you do like this item? And therefore, it's a good halacha question. There is room to be mekel, but I would recommend a person asking a shayla, depending on the country of origin and depending on the tzarech and the lack of alternative and who your rav is, there might be an etza to use it, but otherwise, I would initially recommend a person asking a shayla, ask now, don't wait until Erev Pesach, when usually these shaylas come in. One final question for today's recording, and that is regarding kashering the sous vide machine, a sous vide device. So the best way to handle this is to get a new pot or use a Pesach pot and simply kasher the sous vide device. That's just the easiest way to deal with it. However, a person could kasher the outside of the sous vide device if it's if you could either submerge the entire thing in boiling water, or you could simply boil water in that and allow it to overflow. That would be called hagala. Keep in mind that this is typically made out of plastic, so if you have a plastic sous vide device and your community practice is not to kasher plastic, so one could argue that you should not kasher that. I would still ask a shayla, because very often the way people use sous vide, the sous vide device, they don't really have a significant amount of chametz in use. It depends where you would wash the pot as well. The heater, the submersion heater that creates the whole sous vide experience, so that product is typically made out of plastic. So if you don't kasher plastic, then ask a shayla before kashering. But if you do kasher plastic, the way to kasher would be to submerge that in a pot of boiling water, and that would be the way to kasher it, since it's only used up until a certain point halachically, and it's a shayla how exactly it became chametz in the first place. So there would be a heter to only kasher the part that's typically submerged if you don't want to ruin the computer component. So one would be able to do that and rely on the opinions that hold that suffices for kashering, since it's never used anywhere above that, and anywhere above that would be a splash of water, and the chametz component would probably be batel. Whatever chametz component is in that soy sauce that's in the vacuum pack. So for those that know what I'm talking about, you understand. Otherwise, you could ignore the last 2-3 minutes of this sous vide question, and you could move on in life. So that would be my etza, how to kasher a sous vide machine. So Bez Hashem will do another recording with other questions that were asked.